You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 364, brought to you by Punching Nazis. For best results, sock one right in the mouth. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the program tonight, out of Los Angeles, Mr. Ricky Frankel. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, guys. Heard you guys had a big weekend.
Ricky, I saw, I got to see some sights, forests, and some very nice views. I drove along the... I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce it, but it's like the Susquehanna River, I believe.
Susquehanna.
Drove through the quaint little city that, where is the U.S. Route 220 takes like a little deke through a city that's right across the river, and it's called, it's going to kill me that I don't remember this.
Harrisburg? Scranton?
No. By city, I mean like little quaint street. Oh. Oh, it's going to kill me not remembering what this city called. But it was lovely. It was lovely. Just a lovely weekend of mostly driving, really.
You drove a lot, man.
See, I did not realize you actually drove down. I thought you had...
drove down to see the river, which was beautiful, and the trees. Yes.
Interesting. All right.
That is what I did, and that is the only thing of note.
I don't want to give too much away in the intro, but I got to tell you, I saw pictures on Instagram. I was very jealous and I wish I could have been there, but
the trees were beautiful, Ricky. You should have wanted to be there.
I want to go back to the East Coast at some point. Yes.
I stopped at a little diner in a town that I looked up on my phone that had, like 1300 people that lived in it. And, I got some biscuits and gravy, which is a thing that we don't have in Canada. And I understand why, because it's just like a plate of goo.
Adam, did you somehow wind up in Georgia by mistake? Biscuits and gravy.
Hey, they had it in this diner. John, I was on my way home from this thing we're not talking about. I was driving for a while and thinking to myself, all right, I am now officially kind of hungry, but like, fuck me if I'm going to go to like a McDonald's or something. Like, I want like food that is cooked by a human, and not extruded by some sort of slurm worm. So I drove for a while until I found like the quaintest little like family restaurant where like an old lady in an apron was gonna give me coffee. Took me a while to find one, but that was a mission.
Yeah, apparently you had to go to West Virginia to find it.
I didn't make their menu. So anyways, so we have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about here, and we'll get to what we're actually talking about in a minute. Do we have anything that we want to get into before that, John? Any mail, any news, any happenings?
Let's just jump right into it. We got a big episode tonight, so let's just jump right to it.
All right, are we jumping, or you want to play a song, or what do you want to do?
I'll play a song, actually. Give me feedback on this. So Teenage Bottle Rocket just released that covers album. It's called Under the Covers, I think. Isn't that the name of the album, Under the Covers?
Stealing the covers.
And they cover a band called Pulse Quasar, and there's this song called RoboCop is a Half-Breed Sellout, which I just thought the title alone was freaking hilarious. Well,
it's amazing.
Well, because Google tracks every little thing you do, on my Facebook thing, it brought up one of the guys that used to be in Pulse Quasar. And he said, I just found 14 of our CDs. I'll mail them to you for free if you ask for one. And I think he was like, meant that for his friends. And so I said, I sent him a message. I said, can I buy one? And he said, I'll just mail you one. So I said, okay. So he just mailed me one, and this CD is friggin' hilarious, and actually it's really good. The idea behind Pulse Quasar is the robots that hate humans love to party, and the question is this is, was it rude of me to request one of these very rare Pulse Quasar CDs?
No, I mean, if it was a public post?
I don't even really know, honestly.
Look, the internet decided that you needed to see that post. So that's fine. It's not like you went onto someone's like Discogs page and was like, yo, hey, I know you don't want to sell one of these, but just give it to me anyways. You offered to pay.
I did offer
you
to pay.
Like a gentleman.
Because I thought it was a little too forward to say, can I just have one for free? You have no idea who it is. And in my defense, I am thoroughly enjoying the CD and it's freaking great. But you can actually get the whole thing for free online. Let me give you the name of where you can get it for free in 1 second. But we're going to listen to a track from the album. Do you guys want to listen to RoboCop is a Half-Breed Sellout? Do you guys want to listen to C-3PO learning to confess his homosexuality to Sprocket Nova? I mean, I said Pulse Quasar, the band Sprocket Nova, confessing his homosexuality without shame to C-3PO, I mean to R2-D2. Or do you guys want to hear, let's see, a song about a guy that wants to fall in love with a robot but can't because he's human?
I gotta tell you, I'm interested in hearing the original of RoboCop as a Half-Breed Sellout. All right,
it probably is the funniest track on the album. You can download it for free, and you probably should. The band's called Sprocket Nova. If you just go to sprocketnova.bandcamp.com. Oh, and listen to the name of the guys in the band. John Claude Van Ram, John Bot Jovi, Brendan Fraser, I guess, Sony Danza, and Keanu Keys. And listen, the album's hilarious. You can just download it for free. This is RoboCop is a Half-Breed Sellout by Sprocket Nova, and it's great.
Danza is brilliant. That should just be the name of the band.
The whole honestly, like the whole album, it's really like you'd think, well, you would say to yourself, well, I can see that joke getting old, but the album is tight, compact, hilarious, so it doesn't get old. It's just awesome. You should download it.
Cool.
All right, well, yeah,
okay, so I think the main thing we're going to be talking about for this podcast is the Punk News Summer Soiree was on August 12th, and John and Adam were there hosting it. Openers included Posers, Crazy in the Brains, Pushing It to the Limit, World Inferno, Friendship Society. God damn it. I saw, you know, like I said earlier, I wish I could have been there. I saw pictures on Instagram going around, and it looked really, really cool. And so guys, I assume, seeing how you're both here and living and breathing, I assume, how did it go? Hello?
I don't want to leave like it. Oh, nothing? God. John, where do we start on this?
Dude, I don't know. Do we start at the beginning of your adventure? I feel like that's a good place to start, the beginning of your adventure, maybe. And that way we can discuss all the trials and tribulations on the way to the event and what happened during the event.
Yeah, I think an important thing about the story of putting on this show is that, John, you never put on a show before.
No.
No. And like, I certainly haven't. And so it was just sort of it was really like amazing that one or the other of us aren't dead.
Because
oh my God, I was joking.
I want to make it clear in that this wasn't just like some basement show where it's like $5. And if no one shows up, no one gives a shit. Like, this was a real show at a real licensed venue that could hold 200 people. And there was real money on the table, and there was a lot of moving parts. So a lot of things could have went wrong, and a good amount of things could have went really wrong.
Yeah, and we were driving back after the show was done, and we just kind of kept commenting that it's sort of incredible that it worked, that like things turned out. And we weren't saying that so much just like self-congratulate ourselves.
I
was thinking more just like, holy shit, like how do we get away with that it does not make entire sense. So I don't know, I guess we should talk about this. So the Punk New Summer Soiree, for those that do not know, because we haven't talked about it enough, I guess, was an event that we had organized that was in Philadelphia at a venue called Philomoka
that I had been envisioning in my ask Adam. Did not 2 years ago I came to you with this idea and said I wanted to make it happen, and we tried I think at least two, maybe three times to make it happen, and it just would not happen for various reasons.
Every month and a half John would ask me, am I free on this weekend or this one? And my answer was always just sort of like I don't know, like, you know, I have a life and a family and kids and stuff like that. So maybe, maybe not. Like, what do you want? And then we would just kind of move on to the next month, and that would happen. And there was things, dates that fell through. And I mean, we knew that we wanted to do something with World Inferno. So it was it was making sure that like their schedules and everything lined up were part of it.
Well, actually, actually, originally I wanted to do something with Jack Terrycloth because I had never done a show before. So I said, I'll hedge my bets. We'll just do Jack Terrycloth solo. That way, if nobody makes any money, not that big of a deal. But Jack Terrycloth is an awesome guy. And he basically tried to work something out, but he couldn't get a solo band put together. And so, as is the punk new style, instead of saying, well, we couldn't get it to work, I just kept doubling down on Black. I said, well, screw it. Let's, instead of hedging our bets and bringing down Jack Terrycloth solo for a couple of $100, let's just bring World Inferno down, the whole 8-piece band.
Yeah. And the venue, I guess we're getting a little bit too far in the story here, but like the venue is small, and it is a stage that was realistically too small for all of World Inferno to be on.
And
they did it.
Not only that, Adam, it actually had an extender on it that World Inferno's management, well, not management, tour manager, asked me to put on to make sure that there was enough room for the band.
So, yeah. So anyways, all right. So this show is down there in Philly. I live in Niagara Falls, which according to the Google Maps or the MapQuests, if you live in like 1997, is about like seven, 8 hours or so of a drive. And it was definitely something I was going to drive because it was one of those situations where you look up like the flight, and the flight would have been like, I don't know why, but like a flight from like Buffalo to Philly was going to be like $400. And it would have ended up being, you know, once you work in all of the travel and bullshit, like more or less the same amount of time anyways. So I was like, oh, I'm not doing that. So I got up at like 5 in the morning on Saturday and got in the car and drove. So across the border, John, maybe you think my border story is more interesting than it was, but, across the border at like 5, or well, when would I have crossed? Yeah, it would have been like just 5 a.m. You know, got to the U.S. border control guy crossing the Peace Bridge into Buffalo, And I've learned that like my favorite thing to do with border people now, John, is to just be as incredibly honest as possible. Like I've often tried to like come up with like an easier version of what I'm doing because it makes the conversation smoother, which is I think what most normal people would do now. So you would cross and they'd be like, where are you going? And I would be like, I'm going to Philadelphia to visit a friend, or I'm going to Philadelphia for a concert or something like that. But it was like, no, I'm going to Philadelphia to see World Inferno Friendship Society play. They're a punk band from Brooklyn. And the guy's just looking at me like, I don't know what that is. And he's like, who are you staying with? What are you doing? I'm like, with my friend. He's like, how do you know your friend? I'm like, from the internet. And he's like, well, from the internet. I'm like, yeah, we write about music together on a website. And then he's looking at me and the border guys give you this look, which is the, is that your job? That's the look he's giving me, right? So he's giving me this like stink eye look. And as he's giving me the look, I'm like a blog. He's still kind of just like looking at me. And I'm being way too chipper for like 5 a.m. And the best he could get out is one of his like dumb border guard guy questions was just sort of like, are you a musician? Like he was really fishing for the, you're coming down here to work, aren't you? Right. And I'm like, nope, I can't play a thing. He just like begrudgingly gives me back my passport. So that was my amazing border control story. I guess it's not that interesting because not too much happened, but hey.
Adam, were you nervous that you might get turned around?
No, I mean, I'm a white male. So my interactions at the border, so long as I don't give them the impression at all that I'm like coming to like take your gerbs, they don't seem to have much of a reason to turn me away. So yeah, I'm not usually that nervous. I've been more nervous when I've tried to overthink what I'm doing and come up with a reason. Like I'm sure I've told you the story where like I was crossing once and I was going to in the open source software world, sometimes there's like small gatherings of people that use a certain part of software and they'll call it a camp. So like I do a lot of work with a content management system called Drupal. So if the local Drupal user group in say Western New York is going to put together a little conference of speakers and things like that, they would call it like a Drupal camp, right? There's no camping involved. It's just a software thing. And I know I can't say camp to the guy at the border because that's going to fuck him up. So it was okay, what am I going to do? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to a conference. So I used conference the one day crossing and then I got grilled on all this, like, are you going to speak at the conference? Because if so, then we consider that working and taking our jobs. So the next day I pulled up and I'm like, okay, I'm going to say convention instead of conference because convention sounds more like I'm attending something. And then I pulled up and it was the exact same border guy. And I was like, oh, fuck, original story. And I had to like rewind in my head and go back to conference. Usually when I'm trying to get out of a situation like that, I'm more nervous, but I mean, all things considered,
you should just say like, you should just be like, I'm going to a Drupal orgy.
Yeah. Like if you think about it, all they need to do is have like some, if you give them like reasonable doubt that you're going over for a good, for a true, you know, unimpeachable reason, then they can turn you away. And it really depends on like how much of a dick they want to be. And then I'm sure like being a dick to you involves like some amount of paperwork on them. So it's really like, you know, as long as you like make their life easy, then eventually they'll just kind of let you go. So for me, it's like, hi, I'm an upstanding white male and I'm going to, you know, overshare with you what I'm doing. And at that point, he's just like, I don't fucking want to talk to you anymore. Get out of here. So then I can get over. But I don't know. It's weird. The border guards are kind of empowered right now. So it's hard to say, but I guess I'm pretty safe because, you know. Anyways, though, so yeah, crossed, drove down to Philly. This was the other thing was that John, I won't try to triangulate your position here, but your address where you live is not an address of a city called Philadelphia. It is an address of another city.
Right.
So when he said, "Who's your friend?" and I was like chipperly oversharing with him. I was like, you know, John lives in, right? So, and I told him the place that you lived, and then he's like, where's that? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. It's like, it's in the GPS. I don't know. Like, I hope it's a real place. So John, I drove, it was a long drive. That's not interesting. I got to your house and I had this whole plan, John, where I was going to go and knock on your door and then you would open it. And then I was going to rear back. Like I was going to punch you right in the nose. Right. Mm. Because really, after all the grief that you've put me through over the years, that's the ideal. That's a totally understandable response. Right. I mean, Ricky, you would have done this, right?
Yeah, actually, I have one question, though. I do have one question. What was it like? Was it weird seeing each other in person for the first time?
Well, but this was the problem. So I got to John's house and I knocked on the door. And I'm standing there in my stance like, all right, I'm going to sock him good. Right. And then no one came. And I'm like, huh. And I look in the window. And I'm like, well, it's definitely John's house because it's full of like CDs and shit. So, you know, that's him. But there's no one coming. Like, I knock a little bit louder. And I got still no one's coming. So like, I pull out my phone and I like send John a message or something. It's like, hey. And it's not doing that little Facebook Messenger thing that says like he's read it. And there is like there's a 2 second moment where I'm standing there and thinking like, oh man, I hope he's not dead and this was some sort of weird thing. Like, I drive all this way and I come here and you're just like submerged in a full bathtub or something. And I'm like, oh fuck, now I'm involved. But no, you just came walking around the house because you were going for some sort of leisurely stroll down the street. So yeah, I don't know. It's always sort of weird seeing someone that you've known on the internet for a long time. I mean, I've been through it a handful of times from Punk News and, you know, John, I've seen pictures of John, so it was not all that.
I'll say I was surprised at how not weird it was. I mean, I guess I've known Adam White now for about 10 years or close to it. And then when I saw him in person, it was like I had seen him in person many other times before. Like, he looked exactly like I thought he would look. It's just like a blind date or something. He looked exactly like I thought he would look, and it felt like we had known each other personally for years. Like
I mean, and come to think of it, like 3 minutes later, I took my pants off.
That's right. He took his pants off right in front of me 3 minutes later.
Yeah,
this got weird. This got weird real fast.
I was actually surprised how brazen Adam White was about whipping off his pants.
So the story behind this is, so then this is part of really what makes
yeah, context, please.
Yeah, this is really what makes this a weird event is, this wasn't so much like,
actually, I gotta ask you a question, Adam. So I turned around while you were taking off your pants. Did you expect me to turn around, or were you in locker room mode and you didn't even care at all? I'm curious.
I wasn't going to like involve my genitals at all in what we were doing. So it didn't seem to matter too much.
That's true. Like his hiney side was to me, not his front side. As far as I could tell, but I turned around because I thought that was the nice thing to do.
Yeah. So in any case, so that all factors into the weird, that does factor into the part about this show that is interesting. So this was not just a punk show. This was the summer soiree. So if you're going to soiree, you have to have a certain level of standards to the soiree. So what that means is, John, and this was a leap of faith on my part, John didn't just say, come down to Philly, we're going to have a show. John said, come down to Philly, we're going to have a show. I will dress you. Send me your measurements. So I, you know, sent John my measurements. And John decided that we were not going to just have a show. We were going to have a show in which John and myself would MC the show. And we would do so in suits, which is to say matching Punk News branded suits with canes and top hats and cummerbunds and bow ties. It was a full thing. So the reason, Ricky, why I took my pants off, because I had to make sure that these pants that I've never worn that John had acquired for me, were actually going to fit. So that was kind of issue number one. Like, let's make sure that this suit that you have manufactured is actually going to work out. Now, there we had photos taken. So there are photos of these suits and things like that that we will show people at some point. Basically, what did you do? You went and you like Value Village some blue jackets.
Yeah,
and,
I went to the thrift.
You had a big Punk News Power piece sewed in the back of them.
I went to the thrift store and I found two identical jackets, each of which were our size. Actually, I went to like three thrift stores. And I didn't even notice it at the time when I bought them, Adam. Did you know you're in my jacket were the same exact jacket? I didn't even realize that.
I did not.
And the weird part is they came from different stores. What luck, huh? And so I got these two blue jackets, and then I had my mom sew a Punk News peel on the back of them. And then we had white pants with a stripe going up and down the side. We had top hats. We had blue bow ties and blue cummerbunds. And we also had canes. And I bought two old people canes, like from the thrift store, and I spray painted them white and blue stripes. So we had blue and white striped canes, just like Fred Astaire. And we had top hats.
Yeah. So I got there and we had to make sure all of these things were going to work, because we had very limited time between arriving and actually putting on this show. So, making sure your pants fit is a good first step to actually getting prepped for this thing.
Adam got to my place at about 1 o'clock. We had to be out the door on the way to Philadelphia by 4:30. That might seem like a lot of time, but it really was not.
Well, no, because we had to go to a record store and and we had to go get a cheesesteak because it was my first time in the Philly area. So we did that. The cheesesteak was wonderful, John. I don't know if we need to talk too much about that. But then we had to get everything. So there was a number of things, number of moving parts to this. So first of all, the one cool thing about this, or that I imagine that the band's appreciated, is that because we pre-sold all the tickets on the internet and we sold it out, those bands kind of walked in the door and got paid. And John did this like a fucking businessman, where these bands came in, John paid them, John got a receipt, he confirmed that he paid these bands, and there was none of this like normal kind of bullshit that you have to deal with if you're a band playing a show where like you wait for people to sell tickets at the door, and then come the end of the night you got to go like shake down the promoter and see if you can get your cut and listen to all his bullshit excuses about why he's not going to pay you what he thought he was going to pay you. None of that. John of these guys kind of up and paid and set. But not only that, these bands walked in the door, and what did they get, John?
They each got their own set of exclusive summer soiree cassette compilations. So this was really cool, and actually all the bands are really cool about this. We put together a exclusive cassette compilation that you could only get at the show. It had three World Inferno tracks, two which were exclusive, and one which was very rare, three Crazy in the Brains tracks, one which was exclusive, three rare Push Into the Limit tracks, and three rare Posure tracks. And each band got about 100 cassettes for themselves, and we had some to sell too. And the other cool thing was each band had a cover exclusive to that band. So Push Into the Limit had their own cover, Posure had their own cover, and so forth. And honestly, it is a kick-ass cassette.
And I got to see like John's like old like 1980s looking
my duplicators
cassette rig. Yeah, that was cool to see. So in any case, I don't know. We got that. We got all the other shit that we needed. Oh, the other things that were packed that were filled into a van that we then drove into the city.
Oh yeah, we gotta thank that guy.
The van guy?
No, we gotta have to thank that guy. Go ahead. We have to thank a lot of people, actually. But go ahead.
I don't even know what we're talking about. Yeah. So we packed into this van along with our like CDs and our dumb suits. What else we have to like truck into the show? We had World Inferno's rider, which I won't get into here, but they have certain demands.
Oh my god!
It was as sizable in both money-wise and quantity-wise and volume-wise. It was a lot. We had to have our game show stand that we had to bring with us.
Yes, yeah, okay. Because this was not just a show, it was an event. The plan was that between two of the bands, we were going to have a game show, the Punks Points game that we've played on the podcast before with callers and stuff like that. We were going to do in person. So John had gone and spray-painted a...
it was a watermelon bin I cut up.
Yeah, well... Basically, you made like an announcer's podium that was just spray painted with like a big P on the front of it. And you had a giant paper banner that said Punk News that was like twice as long as the stage for some bad engineering reason.
No, that was for a good engineering reason, because I didn't know exactly how long the stage was, but the word and the banner were exactly right. The idea was that the banner was variable length to make sure that it was wide enough to cover the whole stage.
All right, so we had this banner, we had the suits, we had the rider, which we'll rename undetailed. Oh, and then, because this is a soiree, John decided that we needed party supplies. And everyone that was going to walk in the door to this thing was going to have their choice of, like, beads, tiaras, leis,
glow bracelets,
glow sticks, like, all kinds of stuff. And the thing that made this whole night kind of amazing for us was that all the things that I thought people were going to be, like, too cool for, they were not. So I could definitely see, like, if we were going to do a... I don't know, like pick your band, right? If we were going to go to a Nightbirds show, and we love Nightbirds, but if you're going to go to a Nightbirds show, most of the dudes walking in that door are going to be walking in there with a black t-shirt on. And if you try to give them like a fuzzy boa and a glow stick, they're probably going to refuse, right? But the Inferno crowd was into it. I mean, John also wandered around like a carnival barker at one point and tried to like, and like, you need one of these here, take some, get some beads. And you were just doing your thing.
People took them though. People were taking them left and right.
Yeah. So, so we got to this venue. So,
we had the goodie bags too, Adam.
Oh shit. Yes. This is an important thing. And this is where we need to show it to someone here. So we decided that not only can you come to our fancy event, but you have to leave with gifts. So we decided we were going to put together these goodie bags, like a children's birthday party, right? Where you would get,
honestly, I was thinking more like the Oscars. Like when you leave the Oscars, you get like an expensive bag of gifts.
Oh yeah. So we're going to give you like what are usually in those? Like
iPhones.
You get like a Zune.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And like a pound of fancy coffee, and
even like trip, you know, like trips to Morocco and some stuff.
Like Swarovski crystals and like a bump of cocaine or something. I don't know. So in any case, we decided we're gonna have like these bags that we're gonna give to people. So the bags, Mr. Ricky Frankel, were done by your buddy.
Oh, I heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah. So your buddy Ryan.
Yeah, yeah, he actually mentioned it on his podcast, the event before. Yeah,
that's cool. And he like above and beyond came through on these.
Yeah.
So we got like a couple hundred of these like blue bags with like a Punk News P on the one side and some Anxious and Angry branding on the other side.
Oh, he made them?
Yeah. And then in each of them,
technically record totes, which makes even more sense. They're record totes.
Yeah. So, and then in each of the bags, for each of the people attending this concert, mm-hmm. was a copy of Ezra Kyer's Flexi Disc.
Yeah, that he's given out now. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, and there was other stuff there. There was stuff from Alternative Tentacles that was in there that they gave us.
Asian Man Records gave us stuff too.
Yeah, Asian Man Records stuff that was in there. So,
and DFL, the band DFL, gave us stuff too.
Yeah, so you came to this show and you walked away with like a record and probably a CD and a bunch of other stuff.
Everybody got at least one flexi, one CD, three or four stickers, and one button. The stickers were from Alternative Tentacles. They were Jello stuff, making fun of Trump stuff, and Alternative Tentacles stuff. And most of the bags had a CD, record, shirt, sticker, or button from Asian Man Records too.
Yeah, so it was cool. So we got to the venue. We got stuff loaded in. Inferno sound checked, which was cool. I had like the privilege of like sitting through, you know, a few of my heroes sound checking before, but this one was pretty nuts. Just in terms of like, you know, they didn't sit there and each like toot on their instrument a couple times. Like they banged through like a whole song, you know, as they were figuring it out, which, you know, again, it's World Inferno, so it involves like seven people and a bunch of instruments and everything. So that was neat to see as they were getting going. And then this show starts. So this, do I have anything else to stick between the...
Wait, I have a question. Were the bags given out at the end or at the beginning?
At the end, because we didn't want people to sticker the venue.
Right.
Good call. Good call.
One guy we got to thank is we had a doorman, but he about a week beforehand, he said he couldn't do it. So I got KB Vickers of Teenage Bigfoot to do it. And Adam, you were, I think you were there when I was talking to KB for the most point. KB's a great guy. I kept thanking him, but he's like, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. But it really was a big deal because I needed a doorman that we could trust, and none of that we could trust that could handle shit. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And so KB really did an excellent job running the door.
He handled everything too, right? Like we were a little bit worried that it was going to be a mess checking people in because we saw on Facebook, like there was a lot of like ticket swapping before the show where like, you know, people bought tickets and then, you know, oh, I can't go, so I'll sell them to you. But these were all like Eventbrite tickets. So like if you sell your ticket to someone else, you know, and we were doing this low tech, so we didn't have like a scanner for it. So we were just like had a printout of all the people that bought them. Well, if you show up and you don't have the right, I don't know. Like we were worried that something was going to be a mess about it, but he just fucking cruised through it. And like, he didn't say anything about anything. I didn't hear a peep out of him as far as complaints or anything. Like he did his thing. He walked up at one point, he smoothly puts his hand on my shoulder, gives me $5 and he goes, go over there and ask him for a lager. And I'm like, is there like a kind of beer? Like I'm being like, I don't know your local beers. I'm like, is there? He's like, don't worry about it. Just ask him for a lager.
KB is smooth as hell, man.
I'm like, all right. So went, got him his beer, but that's all he asked of me the whole night. He was great.
Yeah, like he doesn't realize, like I mean, like if some knucklehead do it that maybe just like start letting people in or didn't, you know, wasn't diligent. Like I don't think KB realized how to the degree that he saved the day. And I mean, because really the door guy is kind of the most important guy or one of the most important guys. But Adam, as busy as we were, there was no way that we could have done it at all. You know what I mean?
Oh, shit. No. So I guess we should get into why we were busy. So this show starts. The show starts by all of a sudden over the mic, putting on the Ritz comes on, and as this soiree music is starting, John and myself get onto the stage and we do, I don't know, like a little shimmy. What would you call it?
We do our feeble attempt at doing a Fred Astaire routine, but neither Adam White, not only are Adam White and I not trained dancers, we're not talented dancers at all. We have no talent when it comes to dancing. So we did our best.
Nor have we really ever seen many Fred Astaire routines. At least I haven't.
Nor did we even really practice. We didn't even really, really practice, you know?
No. So we danced around goofily for a while, and then there was a record scratch, and then after the record scratch, what was the song that came on?
It was it's King T, the 45 King, but the song everyone knows it. It's DJ Cool's "Let Me Clear My Throat." You know, it goes bum ba da ba da ba 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 ba. You'll know it if you hear it. Just Google "Let Me Clear My Throat," DJ Cool, and you'll. It's the song that goes bum ba 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 na 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 na. You'll have to listen to it.
Anyways, so then we jump around and scream,
jump, 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 jump.
Philly, let me hear you scream. And this was definitely like I want to say like a little bit of a personal stretch for me. I mean, I'm pretty good on stage speaking at like a tech conference or something. But for John to go here, put on this suit and top hat and then come jump up and down on stage with me in front of this punk crowd and scream at them, that was not something that I would normally have done with my life. So that was cool.
You did a pretty good job, Adam. You did a pretty good job.
Hey, you gotta step up, right? So we yelled at them for a little bit, and then we got off the stage, got this giant Punk News banner, unfurled the Punk News banner, pushing it to the limit is setting up behind us, then pushing it to the limit screams, what was the exact thing that they chanted?
It was the same. And there, of course, there was this tragedy where these white power guys ran over these protesters. And the weird thing, well, I don't know how weird or whatever, is I had no idea about any, like everyone's talking about it.
Yeah,
but actually, I had no idea because I was so busy all day. I didn't even.
Yeah, we should talk about that as well. And I meant to mention that on here. So Charlottesville is the city, right?
Right.
So the tragedy in Charlottesville, the death of the young woman that was run over by the Nazis and all that happened like the day of our show. And we were so running around that like neither of us had looked at the news at all. So, and even on my drive up, like it may have happened while I was driving to Philly, but I was like listening to podcasts all the way. Right. So we were just like, we're just running full tilt all day. And then we got there. And then, so what did they start with?
Well, Andre Crash starts telling me, she's like, we're going to dedicate our song to that young lady, and we're going to donate our share of the money to some civil. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? And then she told me, I'm like, and then like because it's such a complex story, if you will, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about, Andre. So anyways, the show, we're going jump Philadelphia, let me hear you scream. Then we yell, Philadelphia, are you ready for pushing it to the limit? And people go, ah. Then Adam and I jump off the stage, we hold up the banner so it's blocking the stage, and all you can see is this giant white banner that says Punk News. Then Pushing to the Limit yells, Nazis, fuck off, Nazis, fuck off, Nazis, fuck off. And then on the third time they say, Adam White and I ripped the banner in half, revealing the band, and the band jumped right into their first song.
Now, the crowd was all like they were receptive to this Nazis, fuck off thing, right? Which, to a degree, my brain is just thinking like, all right, like, yeah, Nazis, fuck off, sure. Like, of course Nazis should fuck off. Sort of a weird thing to yell in the middle of this show, but hey, whatever, I don't disagree with it, so Nazis, fuck off. And like, I didn't even realize like that news had happened until honestly like Sunday night when I was home, because like still like I got up in the morning, got back in my car, drove back to Canada still listening to a million podcasts, and like I did not have a chance to actually sit down and like process any of this until the evening. And it was just like, oh, that was a little bit of a hairy time for America that happened that I was, you know, completely oblivious to while I was there. So, yeah, that was weird.
But anyway, the intro was awesome.
It was epic, right?
But we should point out is we've never done this before at all. And this is a punk crowd. It's not a hip hop crowd. The joke, if you will, is that I was taking hip hop concepts and applying them to the punk rock concert. I was applying a high class soiree elements, hip hop elements to a punk show. And so the intro that we did was essentially a hip hop intro, and we didn't know how it was going to go over, but the people were down, Adam. They were down.
Yeah. And that was the interesting thing is like, we did kind of have this like weird pastiche of shit that we were trying to do. But anyways, yeah. So what? So I guess, you know, pushing into the played,
and they killed
great.
It. They killed
I,
it.
I honestly hadn't heard too much of them, you know, outside of stuff that you've played in the podcast before, but, you know, they had like a really fun look and like a fun just stage presence. And, they're very, very similar to a lot of the bands that I'm kind of getting into up here right now. So yeah, pushing it was great. Then Crazy in the Brain.
Well, and between right? each band, we kind of had like every single element of this show worked out ahead of time because I had this vision. And I don't know if you had this experience, Adam and Ricky, have you had this experience? When you suddenly get a vision and the vision is complete as soon as you get it, you can make it work out almost exactly as you envisioned it. Not piece by piece, but if you have the entire vision all at once. Do you guys ever experience that?
I think I have before, sure. I mean, for any plan to go 100% according to plan is kind of rare. There are always typically hiccups, but if that's what happened, I mean,
so
awesome.
So between each band, I had the idea, not only were we mixing hip hop and high, I guess, what do you call it? Not high class, but you know what I mean. Elegance.
High society.
As I said, between each band, we're going to play 80s dancehall reggae, which... but the reason I did that is because at most punk shows they play punk music between each band, and honestly, like Blitzkrieg Bop rules, the Dead Boys rule, but I've heard it all before, you know. And also when you play that, it makes the band less unique. So I had the idea is we want people to have a good time, we want people to be in a good mood, all play upbeat dancehall 80s reggae between the bands. That way people, it's almost like dance music, so people will be grooving and it'll be in contrast to the punk bands. And honestly, Adam, it wasn't like a dance party, but people were grooving.
Yeah, there was no complaint. So our timing on this whole show had to be pretty on point, because there was like a hard out noise curfew at the end of the night, and between all the bands playing, we had all of these like game showy things to do. So we needed to kind of make sure that everything fired properly. And thankfully, like, it did. Yeah. The bands, they got there when they needed to get there. They played. They all play. Like, I don't understand. Like, they all seem to play sort of extended sets, but they weren't long. So I don't even know how. Dude, you square
we got to thank the band on this, because literally, see, hypothetically, we really should have had three bands for the amount of time we had, 7:30 to 11:30 hard. That's three bands, right? But I had four bands. I don't know why. Well, because I wanted all four bands, I guess. And honestly, it was a better bill with all four bands. If we had three of those bands, it would have been awesome. But the fourth band, whichever fourth band you want to say, did make it better. You know what I mean? So, but the trade-off was, is we literally, we had 10 minutes to spare. And if we went over that, that means World Inferno's set time would have got short, cut off, and people would have been pissed off because most people were there for World Inferno. You know what I mean? And so, and we got to thank Audrey Crash and push them to the limit. She, along with myself, made it clear to bands that we have to stay on schedule. We have to stay on schedule. We've got a very tight schedule. We can't go over. And to the all the bands' credit, bands are notoriously, like, you know, head in the clouds. Every single band, bam, right on schedule or early. So all bands got a full set. And we were actually about 5 or 10 minutes ahead of schedule. It was amazing.
Yeah. So Pushing It finished. Crazy and the Brains went up next. Crazy and the Brains was I perched myself like right next to their xylophone player on the side, and I was just watching him the whole time. That was cool. People were, you know, I think people maybe didn't know Pushing It to the Limit as much, right? So they had that sort of like we're the opening band, so, you know, you're going to have to get to know us as we're playing kind of thing. But Pushing Into the, or, but Crazy in the Brains, they like, they made the crowd move up. They got everyone sort of like in there, and you know, everything sort of was just clicking for them. I mean, they, I don't know. Do you want to say anything about their set? I mean, like, it was good.
Yeah, Crazy in the Brains are in a prime right now. They basically did all their biggest hits. They did them super fast, super energetic. And, you know, Crazy in the Brains are an awesome band because they're definitely punk, but they're weird. I don't know if you can explain their weirdness necessarily. I guess you can just say maybe it's like a little bit of Pee Wee Herman mixed with punk, but there's a little bit of an edge to it too. So I guess maybe
Pee Wee Herman. That is great.
That's a great description. I was gonna say that like on record, there's something that's almost a little bit like twee about them. Like there's something like a little like that's like a little bit cute, like a little bit kind of like fun and jokey. That, but like they were like a fucking punk band on that show. Like they played. You know, they played loud. You were breaking xylophone sticks, right? Like they were, you know, they brought it. They did it. They did it exactly kind of like, you know, that fits that kind of show. So, yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting them to sound as muscular as they sounded, I guess, having heard their stuff on record.
Part of that,
so that was really cool.
Part of that might be because now they've got Ernest on guitar. So they've got a fifth member, Ernest, playing guitar. He was the guy that was like doing all the stage moves and stuff. Ernest, well, listen, everybody in the band is amazing. Like, the whole band is awesome. But Ernest works especially well in the band in that, like, because he's only doing guitar, he can do, like, moves and stuff and act kind of like a hype man to Chris Urban, the singer. And then, you know, Brett on a bass. The whole thing is just awesome, dude.
So, after them, it was – so, did we do the
– we did the game show next.
We did the game show after them. So, we played Punk's Points. We had a bunch of categories. And, you know, Ad did trivia. We had sort of pre-selected a couple people that were going to be the two contestants in the show, but then one of them wasn't there. So we just like picked some guy out of the crowd to be
this guy called. His name was like Steven Fantastic or something like that. Like he said he wanted.
That's the guy who didn't show.
So I said, is Steven Fantastic here? And like nobody showed up. So it's just us and one guy for the trivia game. And I'm like, oh man, this could really go like bad. And then I say, does anybody want to play the trivia game? And this one dude, like, and you could tell that like the dude wasn't like. The dude was the kind of guy that you wouldn't expect to be outwardly like, yeah, I'll do it. The word I'm looking for is not reclusive, but maybe shy.
Maybe like a bit introverted.
Right. He's like, I'll do it. So I'm like, come on, Dick, because we're thinking on our feet. And Adam White and myself, we're good at thinking on our feet. So I just say, sir, get on down here. So Adam White in Rod Roddy voice says, Who's the other guy? Ryan, come on down. The other guy was Andrew. So he goes, Andrew, come on down. And we're playing the Price is Right music. And so then we start playing the trivia game. And Adam Way, I selected one category that no one got, but I had to do.
Yeah, so there was a lot of, like, this is a very classic punk rock trivia set that you put together. There was questions about the Ramones. There was questions about just punk rock in general. And then there was a whole category that, for whatever reason, was about Bow Wow Wow. And I don't think anyone got any of those.
No one got a single Bow Wow Wow question.
Yeah. So anyways, though, so we played the trivia game. It worked. It was fun.
And the crowd was into it. Like, the crowd could.
The greatest thing was like when the contestants didn't get an answer to something, the whole crowd was like shouting answers at them. And that was the most amazing thing to me, is that, like, because the crowd could have just, like, you know, ignored our spectacle and just went and did something. You know, they could have went outside for a smoke or had a drink or whatever. Like, they didn't need to listen to us be silly. But they did, and they were totally like shouting answers at them. So that was the most amazing part to me. Like, the lack of cynicism, I guess, that I got out of the crowd for all of this was amazing. And I don't know why I was expecting them to be cynical. That might just be like my own insecurities coming through or something like that. Or maybe it's just that, like, I assume that, like, people at a punk show are going to be like too cool for some stuff. But, you know, to Philly's credit, your people were not so cynical at all.
Well, I found World Inferno fans in general actually pretty are not cynical at all. They're willing to have a little bit more fun and love.
Well, Adam was expressing some concerns. He's like, are you sure people are going to be in this? And I said to Adam, I'm banking on World Inferno's crowd pretty hard. Remember that, Adam? I'm like, I'm banking on World Inferno's crowd pretty hard.
Yeah, I would be suspect if this would have worked with a different band's fan base, in the same way that it did. So, you know, that you know, to their credit, that was good. So anyway, so then Posers came on and played. Posers are hometown there, so the people were super into Posers. There was a little circle pit going on, like, you know, people were into it, and Posers dressed up a bit too. Like, they were coming fancy. So that was cool. And then Inferno played. Now it was a small stage, but that they all got on there, they all made it work. They sounded incredible. Like, that is for the amount of moving parts that are in that band, that was a tight thing, right? Like, it was a tight unit. There was no element of any, like, sloppiness in what World Inferno does, despite how much they may have gotten into the rider, right?
Like, that's the mark of a true pro, Adam,
right? So Inferno played. Now, a couple interesting things happened during Inferno playing. One, it was hot as fuck at that point.
It literally got so hot, the tour manager, Bill, comes over to me, and he's like, is that alarm going off? I was like, oh, I don't know. And he's like, it looks like that alarm's going off. So we go outside to get the guy that's running the venue. And the guy that's running the venue, he looked a little nervous, honestly. He looked a little nervous. And we said, is that alarm going off? He's like, no, that light just goes on when it gets extremely hot inside. So it was literally so
hot. Yeah, somehow shorts out his emergency exit lights or something. Like, well, when people started clearing out of here, Ricky, this is a place where there's like a concrete floor in there. The floor looked like it had been hosed. Just like human condensation, right? Like, liquefied humanity everywhere.
Did the crowd dress up for the Inferno show too?
Well, a little bit. There were definitely people that, there was definitely some dudes that showed up in suits.
There was that guy in the coat and tails.
I mean, I was, there was a couple of guys I was talking to that, you know, they came in wearing a sports coat and a fancy hat kind of thing. You know, people dressed up in their own way, but then we worked to dress them up a little bit more.
Don't you agree that the glow sticks and the legs really did make it a little bit more special and a little bit more fun?
That was if anything, the thing that I thought was going to go flat, and it didn't. So what do I know?
Fuck. Sounds so cool.
So anyways, so yeah, so it was hot as shit.
It was hot.
I stepped outside during Inferno's set at one point, and it was like, it's like being born, right? Or just like, I'm like, oh God, I'm like, I don't want to go back in there for a second. I gotta just hang out here for a minute. So, and the crowd, of course, like right in front of the stage, is going nuts and singing along and climbing all over each other and fucking stage diving and everything. So it was just like a hot mess of people. There was a couple moments that during the Inferno craziness that were iffy. John's hero moment. I'll set it up for you. So this place has a balcony in it.
Are you, like
a
little, you can balcony. Tell the whole story, Adam. Go ahead.
So there's a little balcony that's in there, and on the balcony there is at the one part of the balcony off the side of the stage, there was like a little platform, and the little platform was something that you'd like put a projector on, right? So there was nothing on there, thankfully, because all of a sudden the little shelf bends on its hinges, or bends on its like shelf hanger things, broken, flips down because some dickbag decided he was gonna like leap off the balcony into the crowd. And he does this twice. The second time that he did it, he fucking kicked me in the head. I don't know if I told you that,
John. I did not know that.
No, it hit me in the head, right? So the first time that he went and jumped, like you ran up there to try to get him,
right? Because I'm like standing there, and the tour manager Bill like points up into the ceiling, and I thought he was giving like the number one sign, like cool man. I was like, yeah, yeah, and he's like, then he like points again, and I see this guy like right above me, and the guy would have landed on me, so I sprint out there to try to catch him before he can jump.
Yeah, so he jumps once, he gets back up there, he jumps twice. I think like the second time he jumped in, John fucking bounces the guy. Like you went and you picked his ass up and brought him outside and threw him down the street. In front of whoever was outside at the moment, and you felt really good about yourself.
I did. Listen, man. Like a lot of cute girls at this show, and I wasn't even thinking that. Like I'm thinking like if this guy hurts somebody, I'm going to get sued. The venue's going to get sued. The point of this is to have fun. The point of this is not to be Mr. Danger. You know what I mean? So I ran down. I wasn't even thinking. I picked the guy up literally, and I carried him out. And actually, somehow I picked him up, but I also grabbed his beer out of his hand. I don't know how I did that because I had him picked up, and I grabbed his beer out of his hand at the same time. So I picked him up. I carried him outside, and I threw him on – well, not threw him. I set him down because I didn't want to hurt him because then I get sued. And I'm like, you got to go. You got to go. You got to go. And he's like, I wasn't going to – he's like, I forget what he said. He was like, no hard feelings. No hard. And I was like, you got to go. You got to go. So eventually I scared him, and he kind of like walked half a block away and sat down and looked like sad. and meanwhile, like a lot of the cute girls were like, that's what that guy does. But I could see in their eyes, like John's got it going on. I could see it in their eyes. I mean, I wasn't even thinking that, but I kind of Herculesed at that moment. I really did, man. I was like, get out of here, you know?
Yeah. You see, here's my complete opposite of that is like at one point he came back in. Right.
He did.
And yeah. So he walks in the door and he's like, oh, I'm going to go in there. And I'm like, buddy, you can't go in there. Right.
Good work, like, Adam. I didn't even know that.
No. But I'm like, buddy, you can't go in there. And he's like, no. Like, he's like, what if I just stand like right here? Right. And it was, and me like a sucker, I'm like, like maybe you can stand right here. And as I'm like wishy-washing on this, I'm pretty sure it was like Aubrey Crash like walks over and is like, out. Like
pushes him back. Was that Audrey Crash or was that Jade?
Oh God.
Was it the blonde haired girl or the brunette girl?
I'm blanking on who.
I think it might have been Jade. Yeah, yeah. Wow, I didn't know she did.
Yes, yeah. No, sorry, it was Jade. Yeah. So one of the what is she plays bass or guitar?
She sings in Posers.
Oh no, who am I thinking of?
Audrey Crash plays bass in Pushing It to the Limit.
I'm thinking who's the other the guitar player in Pushing It to the Limit?
The short one, that's Lita Gray.
Was it her? I don't know. It was someone who turns out was like way more competent at this than me. In any case, any of those ladies would be way more competent at this than me because they just walked up and were just like, out, and like pushed them out the door. And I'm like, oh, I was totally going to like, you know, like try to negotiate this. And they just like stepped up and was like, get out of here. Right? So I'm standing there like, all right, that's fine. So, so Inferno played until they were done.
Inferno played about an hour 45 minutes. They played a ton of tunes, some new tunes, some classics. They sounded so good.
Yeah, yeah. What were some of the highlights from the set?
There was a fair amount of Red-Eyed Soul stuff that was in there.
Your Younger Man was great. Of course, the opening, Tattoos Fade, was awesome. They did Nightmares off the new album. They did Only Anarchists Are Pretty. They did. It was awesome.
Did they do Me Versus Angry Mob?
I don't know because this was interesting in that, like, I didn't really have fun that night, but the point wasn't to have fun. The point was to create something that was unique, and I think we did it. So I wasn't always focused on the bands like I would be at the concert. I was just making sure it went off as it was supposed to, you know.
You're trying to make sure nobody gets a head injury.
Right, right.
One more set list question. Did they play Taken Down a Peg, I Help Out the Squatters?
No, I don't think so. They did Sick of People Being Sick of My Shit, and it was an amazing version.
Did they say anything about the new album? I don't think so.
They talked about how awesome we were, which was really nice. And Jack Terrycloth also talked about.
Yeah, if you haven't figured it out, that's what this whole podcast is about today, is how awesome we are.
Well, we are awesome, dude.
When I got when I met Jack at a show here, he actually saw, and he knew I was from Punk News. Like, we just talked a little bit before the show, and he actually wrote like something about Punk News on my album when he signed it, which was really cool. But how did the crowd react? Did they say anything about Punk News, or like how did they react to that
part? Well, Adam, we'll get to that when people are walking out the door.
Yeah, I think the bands all sort of like thank the site or kind of like that, and like there are certain people that will, as we were talking to them, like the Crazy in the Brains people, I think like more than anyone talking about it were like beyond gracious about just like, really, I'm not taking any credit for this at all, for John deciding like that they were one of these bands that he was going to champion, like it clearly meant a lot to them, so that it was, you know. It was really nice to hear. So anyway, so Inferno's finished. Or Inferno goes off before their encore. And I'm like, John, we should get the goodie bags out here so we can give them the people. And John's like, they're going to come back and play for like 25 minutes. So don't worry about it right now. And yeah, they came back and they played a pretty extended encore there. So then, as everyone was walking out that door, they got one of these bags, and we were pushing bags onto people. I don't know. Is there a story about this I'm missing?
Well, the story, and we're gonna pump up our own ego. Like there's seven comments that, you know, you guys are stupid. Punk, you suck. You guys are stupid. Punk, you suck. You know, on the way out the door, we had so many people say thank you. The show was amazing. Thank you for putting it together. We had a great time. Like, it was so nice. And I guess this is a compliment. It was so nice for the people that were actually there to say to us they really enjoyed the show and appreciated what we did. And I guess to a degree, that's what I was looking for, because, I mean, this really was 3 months worth of work. And the past 3 weeks have been me doing basically going to work and working on this. And so it really was nice to get the appreciation for the effort and, I guess, slight cleverness that we put into this unique event. So I really did appreciate people saying thank you for putting it on. We had a great time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually the case when I meet someone in real life that they don't reflect like internet cynicism very much. But this was great. The most amazing thing was just like walking outside afterwards and seeing like 100 people sort of standing around on the sidewalk after the show, covered in sweat, holding the Punk News bag. That was just neat to see. So this show ended. The room was disgusting.
Yeah. And it was way messier than I thought it was going to be. See, but before the whole thing went through, the guy that owns the venue, he's like, the bands aren't going to be too messy or anything. I was like, no, what if they're just going to sing? They're not going to do anything. Little did I realize that the audience would bring like silly string and confetti, and they would start throwing stuff. Like after the show, I think the place was a little bit messier than they had expected it to be, the venue.
So we felt a little bit bad. So we hung around and like picked up as much grime as we could to help them, because it was pretty gross. I mean, they went and they pulled out one of those big ass like snail shaped fans that you'd use to like dehydrate a basement after a flood. And and use that to kind of like suck up all the fucking perspiration that was all over the place. So it was good that that was there. Actually, during Inferno's set, the one point where we're like both John and I looked at each other and we're like, "What the fuck?" is so there's someone that like crowd surfs by, yeah, or were they crowd surfing or what? Whatever. They're in the middle of Inferno's set. Someone all of a sudden holds their arm up above their head, and they're holding in their arm what appears to be a clear plastic baggie. That's full of red liquid.
To me, it looked
that like, had like something floating around in it.
To me, it looked like he had a bag of medical waste. That's what it looked like to me.
Like, and we caught each other's eye and we're looking at this and we're both thinking like I don't even know what it was. I'm looking at it, I'm thinking like what is that? Like is he going to throw that at somewhere? Is that like a weird baggie of booze that like he decided like his way of like. You know, instead of buying a beer at the show, he was going to bring in like a plastic bag full of wine. Like, I still do not have any idea what this was, but the fact that it was like hoisted above someone's head in the pit, you know, drifting back and forth was very concerning.
It was gross, but it was concerning because, like I said before, the thing, the guy's like, no one's going to throw anything at the movie screen, are they? I was like, no, none of the bands are going to do that. And then I'm thinking, oh my God, this guy's going to throw his medical waste at the movie screen, you know?
Yeah, so that, I mean, I don't know whatever happened to that.
I assume he drank it.
Consumed.
You know? His medical waste.
I can't fathom what it was.
I don't know.
Because, like, if you were going to smuggle booze into that, you know, we weren't patting people down. A, they were selling booze, but even if they weren't, like, what do you get? You have, like, a flask or something. Like, why would it be in a bag?
It was literally, like, one of those, like, Ziploc freezer baggies, you know, with the strip that changes colors when you, like, zip it shut. Full of liquid. I don't even know how you would drink that.
I don't know what happened to it, but it vanished. So
not our problem.
No, not our problem, I guess. So anyway, I don't know. We got out of there, and then we like we had to like get the fuck out of Dodge before anything bad happened, because it was like this all seems to have somehow inexplicably worked. Like, let's get out of here before a meteor hits.
That was the most amazing thing. Like, so many things could have went wrong, and I was expecting for something to go wrong. I was thinking we would go over schedule, but even beforehand, Audrey Crash was thrown a lot of shows, who was kind of my spiritual advisor, or I guess not spiritual advisor, my regular advisor. She's like, well, something always goes wrong, so you're just going to have to deal with it when that happens. But knock on wood, like nothing went wrong or nothing major. You know what I mean? It was like amazing. Like I honestly can't believe we pulled it off somehow. I don't know how we pulled it off. We've never put on a show before, and we wound up putting on an extremely awesome, unique show with World Inferno Friendship Society.
Yep. So summation of podcast is,
we're cool.
You know, just don't fuck with us, because everything we do works out.
That's right. Listen, yeah, we got to thank Pushing to the Limit. We got to thank Crazy in the Brain. We got to thank Pushes, and we really do have to thank World Inferno Friendship Society, because they played this smaller venue than they usually played. And to be fair, it's like the venue is a great venue, great sound, great to watch. But it's not a hotel. Like the backstage is pretty grimy, you know. So World Inferno was cool about it. They dealt with, I mean, that they worked with what we had to offer, and they were totally cool about it. So we got to thank World Inferno. They were so awesome. And Bill, the tour manager too, who helped out a lot.
Yeah. So this was an experience, and I'm glad it happened. It was, you know,
maybe, you know what, hopefully there's a West Coast version at some point.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, like the liability, because California is just going to fall into the ocean, is probably not something we'd be able to afford.
Well, let's do it before we fall into the ocean.
So we talked about this forever. So here's what we're going to do. Ricky.
Yeah.
You intro and play a song. And then when we come back, okay, we're going to talk about your buddy Ezra.
Yay. All right. I realized the last few episodes I've been playing some like serious stuff, like more hardcore and really kind of darkish. So I thought I'd do something maybe a little more fun and a little bit more funny. So I'm gonna, before I was into punk rock, I was actually really into this band when I was like 13, because I thought they were hilarious. But so this is the Bloodhound Gang, and their song "I Hope You Die." Here it is.
You must die. I alone am best.
We're back. That was a band I never thought we'd play on this show. And all right, Ricky, the two of us have talked more or less about ourselves for a while. So take it.
Okay. So, well, I'll kind of go through both. So, it's been announced that Ezra Kyer of Morning Glory, NDK, Leftover Crack, will be releasing his first solo album through Ryan Young's Anxious and Angry label. The record is called Speakers in the Sky, and it is due out September 26, 2017. Anxious and Angry will also be releasing a bonus track called Stadium Songs that will be only available on a limited flexi, which I believe is what you guys passed out, right?
Yep.
Okay, so Ryan also played the song... on episode 165 of the Anxious and Angry podcast. And you can find the SoundCloud of the podcast there, and you can find it around 12 minutes in. I mean, and actually, let me go to the next one. So today is Tuesday, August 15th. And today I was very happy with this. And Punk News premiered one of the songs from Ezra's solo album called Let It Go, which, believe it or not, you actually could hear on the Ancient and Angry podcast when Ezra was on it, on like episode like 93, I think.
You could also hear it on the Frozen soundtrack.
Wait, what happened on episode 290? What happened on 293?
Oh, on episode, do you guys not have children? That wasn't funny to anyone but me.
Yeah, that was.
Maybe the dads that are listening. Episode 93, I believe Ryan played the song. It was like a year ago, though.
Oh, wow.
A year
ago.
But we premiered the video for it. And this, I mean, if we're not going to get new Morning Glory for right now, this is definitely an amazing thing. I'd heard rumors that there was, that he had something, he had a record, a solo record put together, but, I'm so happy it's being put out now because, this is going to be so good. And I think what I'm getting the vibe as with this is kind of like a more softer, more piano based Morning Glory than the hard hitting Morning Glory. I cannot wait for this. I have, this is one of those rare times where I pre-ordered both pressings of both variants of the record. Cause I am a huge Ezra Kyer fan in whatever he does. So, I can't wait for this. I don't think there's much more ass kissing I can do. What about you guys? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's real good. I think it underscores how Ezra has a phenomenal talent for song composition, which sounds kind of like a dumb thing to say. But a lot of bands have cool songs, but the actual song itself isn't that interesting. Ezra just has the natural gift for making a song that is dynamic, that starts in one place and ends in a completely different place, and it all seems very natural. There's a very natural flow to it. It feels as though that's just what's coming out of him. It doesn't feel like he writes songs. It just feels like the kind of song that comes out of him. So I think Ezra is a fantastic talent, and I'm looking forward to this release.
Yeah, I think he's incredibly underrated and underappreciated, especially since I think War Songs was criminally underrated by the listeners, but it got overall good reviews. And then I think Ryan Young also put out Post War Songs, and I think that got kind of ignored too, which is a shame. Those are both fantastic records. But Morning Glory is hands down my favorite band right now. Actually, they have been for a long time. Unfortunately, I've never seen them live, so I'm hoping he'll tour this. I don't know. Adam, what do you think of the song? Are you going to check this out?
So I haven't heard the one that we posted today, but I listened to the FlexiDisc about like 20 minutes ago. And that doesn't make any sense because we recorded an hour of us talking about ourselves, but let's say an hour ago. it's cool. I want to go back and check out the stuff that's going to be on the album, though. So
cool.
Need to get to that.
And then, do you want me to keep going on these, or
I don't know? Do you want to mention any of these? It's been a long.
I can read.
Actually,
the other two.
We should definitely. Oh no, sorry. These other two we should make mention of. Hold on, Ricky. We'll get to your story at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
John, you want to talk about your exclusive here with Mr. Brian?
Oh yeah. We'll just burn through this quickly because we'll talk about more of this in the future. Brian McMickey, he's the guitarist and singer for Power United. Power United is not broken up right now, but they're on an extended hiatus. Brian McGee is down. I think he's in North Carolina or South Carolina. He's got a new power pop band. The power pop band is called Sneakers Award, and they got two tracks. We debuted a two-track demo, and it's got a power. Honestly, like Brian was telling me, it's power pop. It's power pop, but to me, it doesn't sound like power pop. It sounds like Plow United kind of music doing power pop. So if you're into Plow United, you will dig this. If you're into power pop, you'll probably dig this. But it's a cool little project. I'm very excited to see where it goes. So you should check it out. It's a Sneaker Award with Brian McGee, and they got two tracks out now.
All right, so Ricky, you got to talk about this project of yours.
Okay, so a long time ago. Not a long time ago, maybe 4 or 5 months ago, I found this Instagram account called Greg Graffin Pointing at Things, and it was just someone taking different pictures off the internet of Greg Graffin live and pointing at different things on stage. And what I later found was like, there's this trend within the, there's like the small punk Instagram people that do like vinyl and are, you know, are musicians or whatever. And then there's the, then like this growing trend of Instagram accounts just coming up, just being made by anonymous people, that were kind of mimicking the Greg Graffin's pointing at things, kind of theme. So like there was Jay Bentley doing weird things, Milo Aukerman grabbing his ass, and, you know, Fat Mike interrupting Bad Religion, and all, and they just kept like popping up. And I thought this would be kind of like a fun little feature that I thought would be hilarious. And overall, like, I actually got a good response on Facebook and in the comments on Punk News. I was very happy. It got shared like 30 times, and I couldn't believe how many comments were on it, on Facebook. So when 3 weeks ago now, I reached out to the person that is in charge of the Greg Graffin pointing at things account. And I asked them a few questions. And that was me. And so, and then I had to put this off for a while for whatever reason. And then, cause I didn't think it really was time sensitive, but, now, I wrote a whole article about it, and it was just completely insane. And, I thought it was just kind of a fun, different little thing to contribute. And it was, and by the way, I'm not totally patting myself on the back. I totally realized how funny but dumb this is. And so I thought it was, had just enough of that to be something fun and some of kind of punk news, on the punk news whimsy, spectrum. So I don't know. I don't know how, and it's funny because, the guy got like the Greg Graffin pointing at things account got like 300 more followers since this got put up, and it's now in the account bio, believe it or not, which I thought was pretty funny. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, did you guys, there was mostly just like funny lighthearted trolling going on in the comments, but I didn't hear what you guys had to say about this. I thought this is more trying to get meme culture involved in punk news, but I didn't know if you guys had anything to say about this.
Ricky, how dare you do something whimsical, punk news? We're very serious.
Yeah, well, for first of all, that's way more of a John move. So stop.
I that's why this is rare. Shit here. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I was just I was going through these as you were talking about them, and none of these strike me as like super haha funny. Some of them are definitely a little bit more well thought out than the other ones. Like clearly the Greg Graffin one is the one that
started it all. Yeah.
Is, you know, it's the one where the guy who set it up, or I say guy, but whoever set it up had a pretty good idea that they were going to, you know, do something weird on the internet. Some of them are kind of lazy.
And didn't you just spend an hour talking about how great it was that no one was cynical at the Punk New Summer Soiree?
Just saying, if you're going to have a comedy bit,
it's true. We were prepared. You know what I'm saying?
The best nugget of this whole little project that I did was finding out that Brian Baker wearing his own band shirt is actually blocked by the real Brian Baker.
Now you see, that's actually one of the ones I thought was the best, right?
Yeah. But Brian Baker actually blocked that account, which is hysterical.
How do you know he blocked it?
Because if you click on the blocked, on the hyperlink in the article that says blocked, it'll take you straight to the post of the screenshot that account posted, where it says, it shows that they can't follow Brian Baker anymore. And then it says, Brian Baker blocking Brian Baker wearing his own band shirt.
But there's one, the one that is the laziest to me, and, you know, whatever, I'm gonna slag it. Come at me, bro. Is this like El Jefe being the only good member of NoFX? And it's just like they're just like press photos of NoFX, and like, yeah, like Jefe's in them, but that's not really that super funny. If like one of them comes up on your feed, it's just gonna be like a picture of NoFX. So that's, you know, try again. person.
The best ones are ones that highlight some weirdness or some peculiarity about the subject, such as Milo grabbing his own ass, like that's funny. Brian Baker wearing his own shirt, that's funny, you know.
So anyways, internet.
Listen, kids, quit spending your time with memes. Start spending more times coming to punk new summer soirees.
You know what? It's a little meme magic is fine, but I agree. Go to shows. Stop making a ton of memes. Like don't be in your basement making memes all day. God, what's happened?
We get too many memes and all of a sudden we got that fucking Trump frog and then everything just goes to shit. So
listen, follow your dreams. Forget the memes. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right. I'm not going to play a song. This has been a long thing and I'll play a song next time. So
support your scene. Drop the memes.
Rhyming. All right. So we're done. If anyone wants to send us an email, it is podcast@punknews.org. I promise you that the next show that we do will not be exclusively about us unless we do something cool. Then it might be. But, you know, this one was. John, any parting wisdom now that you're a theater impresario?
Less memes, more Boston creams.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.